And I don't mind him switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. The guy who claims he just don't believe the fact. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking down with life, I'm fighting in a fog of doubt. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down with life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. When you run down my country, man, you walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. While lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm. Lots to talk about today, and I'm going to start off with a show I did just earlier this week with Brian Rue, and this is about my being prevented from addressing the Hamilton City Council in a rather sordid decision that they made last week. Hope you can you'll enjoy this. We'll be up on the internet very, very soon, and it's called Plugging Their Ears: Hamilton City Council Won't Hear Paul Fromm on Free Speech. And this is a show I did with Brian Rue just Tuesday.
It's September 10th, 2019. My guest is Paul Fromm, the director of Canadian Association for Free Expression. And Paul, you proposed a delegation to the city of Hamilton, and what happened?
They didn't want to hear from me.
Oh no, what about your free speech here?
I'll give you a little background, Brian. There have been protests in Hamilton every Saturday since last November, outside City Hall from 11 till 2 by the Yellow Vests. And the Antifa quite often come out, and sometimes they're violent, and there have been some confrontations. And of course, the very left-wing political establishment of Hamilton is in an uproar. They call this a hate group. Well then, what really set things off was in June, there was a gathering of the LGBTQ crowd in a place called Gage Park, and I'm not sure what they were doing, but there were some Christian pastors who came out with signs and tried to talk to them, to preach to them that they should leave this depraved lifestyle and so on. Well, of course, then the Antifa showed up with pink bandanas, and they tried to hit the pastor's signs. They dragged some sort of a big screen to screen the pastors away from the LGBTQ ground, and then some people from the Yellow Vest showed up, and there was some push and shove, and a number of people got arrested, one of the good guys and several of the Antifa. Okay.
Really? Wow, that's news. Wow.
Well, that's hugely up. Rage. Our local left-wing paper, the Hamilton Spectator, I call it the Expectorator, the big spit, and the local CBC, and various, I think largely government-funded diversity groups and LGBTQ groups, and we don't feel safe. And the mayor said he'd heard from Muslims who were afraid to walk by the Yellow Vest protest if it made them feel uncomfortable.
They don't feel safe. Oh, my God, have Newsom, they don't feel safe.
Cross the road, carry on the sidewalk on the other side. I mean, come on. So city council said, well, they told their the instructed staff to come up with measures to prevent hate groups from using public space. And I thought, did I read this right? And I thought, the local paper is so notoriously wrong, I actually went online to see if that's what the council had said. I thought, could you really pass such a resolution in Canada? I mean, trying to figure out ways to prevent groups from using public space. Oh, sure enough, that's what they wanted. Right. So the staff is working on a report. So I thought, I want to go to the city council and basically try to set them straight about freedom of speech and our fundamental rights. Now, there's a procedure in Ontario, and I think probably elsewhere, and we have boards of education and city councils, where if you have something to say to them, as I said, so you've got an issue you want to bring to their attention, you can ask to go as what they call a delegation, which means that you register and they give you 5 minutes at near the beginning of the meeting. And they hear, what you have to say. And when I was on the Board of Education many years ago, we did just that. We would have, parents would say, we've got an issue. And we would say, okay, well, you register, we give you 5 minutes at the beginning of the meeting. And those delegations might take up, depending on the night, 20 minutes or half an hour. And in the Board of Education days, they were mostly talking about busing. Some parents who didn't quite qualify, they're very close to a mile from the school, but not quite, they want a special exception. So, fine, but that's the purpose. You get to hear what people have to say, and then normally then that issue gets put on the next agenda. The staff will do a report, and we discuss it at the next meeting. Okay. So that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to, you get my 5 minutes, and what I wanted to tell them is, well, how dare you? How dare you talk about finding ways to restrict citizens from having a protest? Well, they call them hate groups. But, that brings up a very good question. What's a hate group? Well, hate's a very particular term in Canadian law, and it means having violated Section 319 of the Criminal Code. Willfully promoting hatred against one of the privileged groups. Well, none of the groups, the main group, the Yellow Vests, have never been charged, have never been convicted. They can't be called a hate group. I mean, that's a libel, that's smear. They may have views that some people on council don't like. They, for instance, want the law about the immigration law in force. They don't want these illegals pouring across the border from Quebec. That's point one. Point two, they're against the carbon tax. And point three, they're against the UN protocol on refugees, which, among other things, requires governments to suppress free speech. Anyway, I wanted to say that, and I wanted to say, you know, and I'm without calling you people ignoramuses, but the right to petition the king goes back to 1215, when the barons confronted King John at Runnymede, and they got the Magna Carta, and one of the basic rights is to petition the king.
Now, a big history in freedom of speech.
And that has come to mean, among other things, protest. That's what a protest is. We citizens are out here, and we have a beef with our government, and this is, these are our requests or demands or whatever. I mean, that right is also guaranteed, to the extent the Charter guarantees anything, it guarantees the right to assemble, or freedom of speech, freedom of belief. Well, that's what's going on there. And I just wanted to say, you know, gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, shake your heads. I mean, what's going on in there? How dare you? Now, it's legitimate to say, well, we don't want violence. Absolutely. That's a police matter. And what the police ought to be doing, and I think sometimes are doing, you keep the yellow vests on one side of the street and the anti-people on the other side of the street. As a matter of fact, it's a very wide street. So, you know, sure, law and order is peaceful assembly is very important, but you don't require special restrictions. So that's just all I wanted to say. And I mean, it's taken me almost 5 minutes to say that. That was going to be my presentation. I mean, not exactly inflammatory stuff. Well, that's not the way, of course, the Antifa and their friends in the Twitter sphere were very upset. They didn't want me speaking. Some of the counselors, very left-wing counselors, did. I'm just going to read the statement. One of them was named Sam Marula, and he said, it's very important not to provide oxygen to radical individuals to espouse a lack of tolerance toward marginalized groups. You know, it bothers me that a person like this knows what I'm going to say before I even open my mouth. Now, was I talking about lack of tolerance toward marginalized groups? No. I was talking about, or would have talked about, the right of citizens, whatever their stripe, to peacefully assemble to make protest. That's what it was. But Sam Marola said it was important not to provide oxygen. No, you hopped up totalitarian. You should shut up and listen to the citizens. You should sit there as a counselor for 5 minutes, hear what I have to say. You don't have to agree with it, but to listen. We don't want to give them a platform. Sorry, that should not be the consideration. You're not providing me a stage, at the local arena, and renting the place for me. You would be acknowledging my right as a taxpayer and as a citizen to address you on a matter of concern within the 5 minute time constraint. Anyway, so that he was one of the leaders of. They had a meeting. My request went in almost a month ago. So last Wednesday they had an organizational meeting for council, and they decided who would be the delegations later this month, I think on the 19th. By a 14-0 vote, I was turned down.
14-0?
Yeah, no way.
This shows some centralized Jewish control of the city of Hamilton, it seems. Like, wow.
Well, as I said to the local press, I had to scratch myself to remind myself that I'm in Hamilton, not Havana.
Because you're an articulate gentleman, and in 5 minutes you can put some free speech, common sense across. Like, that's what probably scared them, so better not to give you the chance at all. Otherwise, you're going to have to be faced with the Constitution of Canada or face reality, I suppose.
So there were two councillors who moved the motion not to hear me. Sam Marola and Chad Collins. Now, Chad Collins is an interesting character. I believe he used to be a provincial conservative member of the legislature. You wonder, well, what did conservatism mean to you? I mean, this is communism. And then, understand this person. Her name is Councillor Narinder Nan. I don't think she's from County Tipperary, but this is what she said. As an elected representative of the people of Hamilton, it's my duty to uphold the integrity of the council chambers.
What? I guess that means to screen out white people, prevent white people from speaking. I guess that's the integrity of the council chambers.
To screen out white people and to screen out anybody who wants to refer to the traditional rights of Anglo-Saxons, the people who built our country. Now, maybe Narinder, what's her name? It's a she. Narinder Nan. Well, perhaps where she comes from, that's a country that doesn't know much about your rights. Unfortunately, they're bringing these views with them. And so, 14 to nothing, they're not going to hear from me. It's pathetic. Fortunately, I've gotten a lot of support, and some new people have come out of the woodwork who were who couldn't believe it. I mean, the city council won't hear you? No. Well, how long are you going to talk? 5 minutes. They won't hear you? No.
Well, it's great that you ask, and the fact that they said no just supports our side.
Well, the story broke on Tuesday, the day after Labor Day, and it was the front, it was the top half of the Hamilton Spectator, which has it in a new format.
It's a way to go. That's great.
Well, that caused all sorts of trouble. that was a story telling about all the controversy. Then they had to vote the next day. But there were leftists who were furious that they put me on the front page, and that gave me and then the Hamilton Spectator's in with the Nancy.
And you say, Paul Fromm has entered the building.
So, it's been an interesting week, I would really have preferred to have been able to speak there for the 5 minutes. However, I probably have gotten a lot more attention and publicity than if I'd gone. You know, the simple thing. See, people with a bad conscience make mistakes. A smart operator would say, look, given this 5 minutes, we can sleep through his talk or twiddle our thumbs, and after 5 minutes, he's off stage. We go on to the next person.
Maybe they're worried that there's not enough unity amongst themselves. Maybe you might actually get through to people. Maybe that's what they're afraid of.
I think they really know how fragile this house of the corrupt cards is. You wonder, do they actually expect me to come up with coming with leather knee-high boots? From another.
Maybe they're afraid you're going to raise funds to build a gas chamber or something.
Right? Did they really think that? And I've said to several of my advisors here. I said, well, you know, I was in the. There were two public debates last year when I ran for mayor, and I certainly didn't live up to that scenario we just talked about. I showed up in a business suit. I spoke, I've been quite, forcefully, but moderately. And so what were they afraid of? Well, there's a fellow who's become a bit of a friend of mine, Edward Grayson. He ran for mayor, too. He's from old Anglo-Saxon money. He's got dealings in China. He said, well, he told me, and he's backed me publicly on this. And he said, and they're actually afraid you will make sense. You see, the media and the Antifa and the Canadian Anti-Hate Network have used neo-Nazi, neo-Nazi, neo-Nazi. If I show up in anything other than that, an actual socialist uniform rented from Malabar Studios, I win because I'm not what they've been told.
So you're going to make sense because in an age of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
Orwell had it absolutely right. So that was the excitement for last week. And I'm getting some new people that are joining up and coming out of the woodwork. And, you know, that's great. So as a matter of fact, that they may have done me a favor by not letting me speak, by denying me my rights. And you know, and this is not a privilege. And I am looking at legal options, although I'm not sure there are any easy legal options. But it's not a privilege to talk to this gang of overpaid poobahs. That they're supposed to be our representatives. They should really shut up and listen to the citizens. And that's one reason why there is such a growth in the populist movement. People are fed up with being ignored.
Yeah, and they should have listened to the great Masonic leader of the 19th century, Albert Pike, said, "What you suppress just goes stronger, so it's better to ignore." They suppressed you, they just put more of a spotlight on you, Paul, so way to go.
Thanks.
Okay, see you next time.
Will do.
Well, that was my Plugging Their Ears in Hamilton show with Brian Rue just earlier this week. And I'm going to... Brian Rue has an incredible playlist. Almost 2,000 videos on most of them now on BitChute. You might want to go to BitChute and Brian Rue, and that's spelled B-R-I-A-N, and Rue is R-U-H-E, Brian Rue. I think you'll find find this.
It's September 10th, 2019. My guest is Paul Fromm, the director of Canadian Social.
Okay, well, we've already heard that, so good as it might be to hear it a second time, I'm going to go on to another Brian Rue discussion with Dennis Wise and Pete Papaheracles of the American Free Press on Freemasons, the Bolsheviks, and the Rothschilds. And I think you'll find this a very interesting conversation. This is with Pete Papaheracles on the Freemasons, as well as Dennis Wise.
Bastard said nothing, but he would say nothing. He's not going to stop the country voting for abortion. Because they're Masons. And the world is going that way. I mean, I think it was coming to by the back door, I did a bit on Freemasonry, and I showed how they destroyed it in the Channel Islands. That lodge in the Channel Islands, if you remember, there was kind of a creepy guy who was disgusted in the Germans wrecking his lodge. But there was another guy talking as well, saying that there was this rumour of these Freemasons running Britain for the last 200 years. And he was kind of making it out as if it were a rumour and hogwash. But then, Satanic Victory, they actually come out and say, yes, Freemasonry has ruled for the last 200 years. And they're going to name all of them on the website. And somebody said, well, that should bring them down then. Why will it? Nobody stirred when they announced it. Not just everybody just carried on. Nothing had happened. But they actually admitted, and so Germany knew. You know, they knew what was going on. Mussolini knew. I mean, and in this part 20, I forgot what the guy's called. He was having he said he watched The Greatest Story. He's got quite a few, you know, people following him. I can't remember his name there. Just like an ordinary guy, you know, but he does these YouTube things. And he said he watched it, and he said, you know, I do have my people watch it, but I don't think a lot of it was propaganda, right? And one of his staff got in touch with him. I said, look, there may be an opportunity here of, you know, you stretching out, then maybe it'll have you on there, and, you know, maybe it'd be a good thing for you, this, to me. Which I did. I said to him, you know, And meanwhile, I watched his videos as well, just to see what he was all about. And he was saying at one point, you know, Hitler wasn't really a military guy. You know, he really, you know, because there's a lot of propaganda about Hitler and, you know, his failed attacks on armies and stuff like that. But in this series, you actually see for yourself, he actually got Europe back. He won Europe back, and he lost something like 100,000 men. All of Europe. Got rid of all the Rothschilds, put all the Christian leaders back in again, and it was all because the bankers then got on the phone to Stalin that he had to invade Russia. But by 1941, he took all of Europe back, back in Britain. I'm talking mainland Europe, took it all back. And if you remember in that promo, I know Pete likes that promo, you know, and then he was a guard.
Oh yeah, I love that.
Right,
yeah.
In that promo it says, when he grew to be a man, he'd take it all back. That's what that was. He
right.
took all Europe back. And people don't realise, the Rothschilds were on the ropes completely.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the Bolsheviks and then the invasion of the Americans which finally stole the power of it. But
yeah.
up to that point, then it was... the war were over.
And the Bolsheviks, with the money and help that was given with the
Lend-Lease,
right? Without that, the Bolsheviks couldn't have done anything.
Oh, no way. It took them down. And that would have been another nightmare then, because they would have had all the resources of the Soviet Union behind them.
Yeah, they could have taken Russia if America
yeah,
wasn't pumping
yeah, yeah,
so much
definitely.
Money and resources.
Well, they were sending tanks. You know, there were British and Russian tanks defending Moscow. You know, these. When you look at the facts of this, you've got two Western leaders, who were leaders of Christian countries, defending the biggest Christian killer of all time. Does that make sense? No. But
no.
Until you realise, Churchill and Roosevelt. Freemasons.
Yeah.
And Freemasons rule Britain, rule America. So World War II is just like, you know, in one way it's dead simple when you see it. But obviously it complicates matters with, you know, obviously different things happening at different times. But to me, if you work for the Soviet Union, like they said, you know, if you work for the Lend-Lease, then he, you know, they've been taken down. And all that time, he did exactly what he did, what America did to Libya. He froze all the assets of all the countries who had got victory in Europe with Hitler. All their countries' their assets were frozen, and he declared them aggressor nations. And in Libya, all the Libyan assets outside Libya were frozen. And they used that money, $520 billion, to destroy Libya. Because somebody said to me, in
"Wow,
picture,
I didn't know that."
Yeah, well, somebody said to me, "Picture the Rothschilds. We all know the Rothschilds from both sides." No, hang on a minute. No, they don't. Of course they do. Everybody knows that. No, they don't.
They didn't fund Libya's side.
They didn't fund Germany, and they didn't fund Libya. And to be honest, they didn't fund Iraq. But what they do is, by saying, to let this myth go, you fund in both sides, it makes the leaders of them countries, Hitler and Gaddafi, traitors.
Yeah, it makes them look like puppets, which is not
which
true.
Which they're not.
Yeah.
But, you know, that myth is, it's quite a brilliant idea, really, because that must have stopped more people investigating history. When that first broke out, oh, it's a Rothschild, people would have just turned away.
You know, they say that there's only a handful of countries left, not even a handful now, there's probably three, that aren't under the Rothschild banking combine, right? And Libya was one of them.
Well,
Iran is one of them. Syria is one of them. And
yeah.
I think North Korea is the other one.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Venezuela
Cuba,
is another.
Cuba, maybe.
And
Cuba,
maybe. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's all that's left. So
we're going China. China's sort of Rothschild.
Yeah,
they're
in there.
And that brings us to the point, Pete, right? That when they said they lost the British Empire, I don't believe them. Before, when they had the British Empire, the people of Britain never, ever meant anything to them. It was only the elite and the Jews what gained from the empire. Mm-hmm. After World War II, when they turned around and said, we've lost the empire, we have to give them their independence, the people of Britain were more acceptance then to recessions and we can't afford it because, you know, all this money we're paying back, blah, 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 blah. But all they did, they put central banks in all their countries.
Right, of course.
Mm-hmm. They never lost nothing.
Just yeah, so it's still advantageous to the Rothschilds and Jews.
Exactly. They can
disguise.
They just took the nation of Great Britain out of the picture, and the control is directly through the banks rather than.
Of course it is, yeah. I mean, right. The Queen has to ask permission to enter that 1 mile strait. Because it's a country within a country. And same with the Vatican at Paul, same with the Washington, same principle. So, you know, and all I hear every day is the Germans were occultists and, you know, nothing whatsoever about Freemasonry. But even that episode on the Armada, that was another one where it kept the history from us.
Yeah, this is the three Armadas from Spain that were...
And deliberately kept from us. You couldn't explain it.
Yeah, higher realm powers, that was really powerful. We did a video on that about a year ago.
Yeah, and that John Dean to play then and all the rest. And since that time, all the Renaissance, all this information of supposedly what the cult believe, is coming down from this higher, you know, the microbes below us, you've got the microbes above us, according to Lewis, something like that, and him who wrote one of Fairy Tales. He was a high mason with the Rothschild. And he's saying that there's just another world above us, which is giving us information, but we don't give nothing for free. And when asked what you want, blood. So after every war, you know, there's a big culling, and you're not telling me after World War II. There were a lot of Germans killed after World War II. A lot of the Axis countries were all sent back to Soviet Union to be killed. Massacres in Europe by the communists on National Socialists. World War I was the same. And suddenly, there's no honour in defeat now, because after World War I, they kept all the colonies, and they kept Germany down. It weren't a matter of like, oh, well, you know, okay, we'll sign the treaty now, won the war, we're in control, but, you know, we'll give you a land back. No, this is a banker talking to you, not a politician.
So you think could have been a blood sacrifice to Satan, you mean? Could have been a higher realm motive as a blood sacrifice?
I think
it's higher realms.
In Talmudism, I looked into it once, and there's certain... There's a ritual which they showed with a child which had some dots in the neck which were caused by stabbing spikes into the neck. And these dots were replica of this word, or some kind of word, trigger word, in the Talmud. And they did it on all these kids, which is why they recognize it as a Jewish thing. And
it comes...
The reason they did it is because they thought it would help them rule the world, but getting to power, which is what they believe in the Talmud. But the thing is that it's not just that, it's the, if you see a young kid, seven, maybe less even, like running around, that energy will go hour length, right, until finally he's put to bed. That energy, in what they see, because their own energy, obviously, to get older, depletes. And there's something in this blood, especially triggered when a child is terrified, the chemistry in the blood triggers it, and when drunk, immediately, it gives them this invigoration, which is why this has been going on. Crowley talked about it, you know,
there's a famous case under the Tsar in 13 when the Jews ritually killed a child was investigated, was blamed on the Jews before the Jews took over power of the Soviet Union.
And he got off with it.
Yeah.
But they said it were a Jewish ritual, but the guy was released. So, and there was another one in America, I can't remember his name, Frank, somebody.
Leo Frank?
Leo Frank, that's the one, yeah. Whereas he'd gotten off with it, but the mob went out with it and broke American jail on him, didn't it?
Yeah, he raped that Mary Fagan, that girl that was working for him. Is that the one you're referring to back in 1912? Yeah, you know, that was really as a result of that case. The ADL was founded. Exactly.
Yeah.
Just like, when the Zionism was founded in Europe, it was right around the time of that Dreyfus affair. So they were using perceived anti-Semitism as an excuse for them needing to make these organizations to protect themselves against alleged anti-Semitism.
That's right, yeah. And the church managed to waste weeks, I would say, because, like I said, early on I talked to Pete Brown. I always looked down at the Russian Revolution as a blueprint for taking down these nations. They've done it all the way. Back, like I said, the Spanish. And so, when you look at that, and you look at Libya, and when you know that, then it's just a total Bolshevik revolution. There's nothing different. They paid mercenaries to go in there. Clinton is a neocon. Bush is a neocon. You know, the Jews over there are neocons. And they're all wanting war and take down the Middle East, because that's, they've already took Europe, World War II, so they're going to conquer the world, you know, the Middle East was next. So, this war, unfortunately, World War II was not a war as such, you know, oh, it's over with, because these wars are never over with. The French Revolution and all the following revolutions after are all connected.
So it's all globalism to take over the entire world.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Gaddafi in this latest video, and we talked about it earlier. You know, I had written a few pieces about Gaddafi back when it was happening, and, you know, with the intention of proving that it wasn't what it appeared to be, as usual.
Sure.
Right. So, you know, I pointed out how great Gaddafi was for his people and all that, but what was the reason, the excuse, if you will, that was even used for us to attack Libya at that time? They were no threat to us.
It never attacked them.
Well, it wasn't. It was the Arab Spring. It was a liberation. They said it was within his own people they rose up.
Don't forget.
But what gives us the right to interfere, like as protectors of democracy, I guess? Is that the idea?
This is what Putin said. What right have you got to do a regime change? That's where Putin took his stand then, because when Syria started, he dug in with Syria, and that's enough. So at least the guy's got morals, even if I can't be convinced totally that he's not part of all this.
Yeah, I wish Putin saved Libya. I wish he stepped in there.
Well, I mean, him and China have vetoed it, but you know it's still a carry. But the thing is that what I was going to say, when you look at I mean, I believe he were a Freemason, Gaddafi, because when you see the handshakes of Blair and Obama, they look like the Masonic handshakes. But obviously, there are some Masons who are not compliant to the general rule. And I think that's going on in Europe today, because they're all Freemasons, all the leaders, they have to be. When Rothschilds took Europe back, he's got rid of all the Christians, he's put all his Freemasons back in again. So even though you've got Italy now who don't want migrants, you've got Poland who don't want migrants, they're not actually coming out saying we want to leave. They do believe in this European Union and this world thing, but they just don't believe in race mixing their own kind. So you've got a split with the Jews, I've said this since communism by the back door, where you've got a split with the left-wing Jews, and a split with your right-wing Jews or the people who support them. People who support the right-wing Jews are your Putins and your Trumps, who are more nationalistic and don't particularly want communism. Whereas on your left, you've got Obama, Clinton, you know, and all the rest who are Hollywood, you know, the press. They hate Trump. and, you know, it's a split. But that's not to say it's a good thing, because whoever wins, the Jews win, because they've already...
Yeah, they just control both sides. They control the right and the left.
Well, I mean, you've got to look at America, and I worry for America, because I've seen what communism does to the Ukraine, Armenia, in Russia itself, and that could well be any for America.
Yeah.
It's not too effective. And if they get the guns...
You know, back when, you know, when they started communism a couple of hundred years ago, and, you know, one branch of communism became the Marxist revolutionaries, right? And they were just open, out-for-blood revolutionaries, right? But they realized that that in itself wasn't enough to take over the world. So they also had their communism through the back... door that we often talk about the Frankfurt School, but even before them you had the Fabian Society, that infiltrated all these governments and pushed them towards socialist agendas.
Which is what it is in England.
Exactly.
Labour Party leader.
Right. So the Fabian Society was established in the late 1800s, right? And here's the funny thing. You know what their logo was?
Wolf in sheep's clothing.
The wolf in sheep's clothing.
It's got a stain in the left window of a wolf.
Their actual logo was the wolf in sheep's clothing.
Wow.
Corbett.
How honest.
That's the one. Corbett. They do. It's true. They have different means. All these.
Well, that was Brian Rue and the Brian Rue Show. This is Paul Fromm. I'm going to take my musical break right now. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to play a man who sort of came up in music in a bit of a shadow, and that was... Hank Williams Jr. Hank, of course, was the son, or is the son, of Hank Williams Sr., an absolute legend who died all too young at 29 when Hank Jr. was just a small boy. And early on, Hank, almost as a toddler, got into singing, and for quite a while, of course, people, his Hank Williams Sr.'s fans wanted him to sing his father's songs, and he liked to do that. But as he grew up, he naturally wanted to make his own mark, and increasingly he did that, and he has his own distinctive sound now, country rock. This is Hank Williams Jr., and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
My cigarettes and all my good friends.
Hank Williams Jr., this is Paul Fromm. You're on The Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on The Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our Barbos, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose entwine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. And Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.